Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Today on this episode, we use Spotify Green Room again. It's a really, really good program. We're looking to get better at it, but there were a few drops and things, especially on Andrew's side, but do bear with us as we try and work with Spotify Green Room. It'll be better in the long run. But on this episode, we were also joined by Adam Westerhout, who's a Wildcat fan with boots on the ground. And as you can probably guess, we spoke predominantly about the Wildcats, the streak being over, that game against Southeast Melbourne, and why that streak is now over. We also spoke about the awards. And then as we've come to the end of the regular season, we really spoke about the health of the NBL, on court, off court, and a whole bunch of things. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks very much.
Three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous. From a beautiful left hand, in and out. Fashion.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Steph wraps it up.
The season's come to an end. What are we all thinking? Like, was NBL 22 better than 21? Was it better, worse? Let's start with Andrew Crennan. What do you think? NBL 22, what are your thoughts about it ending?
NBL 22, better than NBL 21. That's requiring me to remember NBL 21. My goodness, it seems so long ago. I would have to say, though, I think 22 has been, it's been a struggle. I think it started off quite excitingly, and then you get into the dog days, and it seems like it's been going on a long time. I know 21 had that NBL Cup period, which seemed to get a lot of games through, and while the crowds weren't huge for it or anything, it got a lot of games done to sort of maintain some intensity. I don't know, 22 has just been, I feel like I'm a bit burnt out at this point.
It has been a longer slog, I think, and without the novelty of a cup in the middle of it, it definitely feels longer. Enjoyability-wise, I think I still preferred NBL 21 just because of that cup aspect. But I do remember feeling a bit worn out towards the end of 21 as well.
I'll say with 21, I felt the opposite. I feel more strongly that this was a better season. I thought it had a better kind of roster construction start to the year. But the NBL Cup, I remember just some of those attendances were so poor. And it really overlapped badly with the AFL and NRL. It's overlapped a little bit this year. But last year, it was just, this sport was just, and the NBL was just totally lost. And Andrew, I don't know if you remember, or Adam as well, but remember Kesselman's championship speech was so defeated. It was like, well, we made it. That's, I know, right, we're trying to end of the grand final, but
that's right.
I think this season's been quite good. I mean, three imports as opposed to two, but it's had some ups and downs. What do you think about the health of the league? Like, the NBL is obviously charting for growth, right? Year on year on year. Do you think, I'll start with Andrew first, do you think the league has gotten better from last season? What do you think?
I think they would say that they would classify this as a win because of the Jack Jumpers doing so well. But I'm looking at it and thinking this is troublesome, particularly with Illawarra. I just look at their crowd numbers. I think Nick Tan, friend of the show, put out some stuff showing the crowd numbers on the season. For that Illawarra team, as good as it's been over the last two seasons, to still only getting like 2,000 or 3,000 people to a game, God, that's worrying. Cairns should be having that problem, but they're doing better than Brisbane as well. I just think there's something wrong with the willingness of people to spend money or not willing to spend money to go see these good teams. It just seems like it's an insurmountable problem. I don't know how you get past it.
Adam, what do you think? What do you think from like a media? Perth has always got a pretty good following. Lachie Reed really takes the league under its wing. He gives it a lot of time in Perth. And when I was there, I saw it in the news. What do you think about the health of the league and the growth of it? Any better, any worse?
I think they are on par with what they needed to do this season, considering it was COVID impacted again. I'm hanging out for a COVID-free as much as possible, no masks, you know, no mandate sort of season where there are no restrictions, teams aren't having to worry about borders and things like that. I think you really need to factor that in when you look at what the league was able to produce. And I think they've done well considering all those factors. but I hope it's enough to keep momentum going into next season, which is hopefully a proper, full, normal NBL season that we're used to.
That's used to be. That's a good point, especially considering New Zealand. Like, they add so much flavour to the league. You know, just that difference. It's a unique situation having the Kiwis involved, you know, on their home court. You know, I think that's – you don't realise how much it's missed until it's gone. And I think getting it back next year, hopefully, will be like, oh, yeah, that's right. This is what we like.
I think, yeah.
The Breakers.
I'll just say quickly, Adam, I think the way you put it, or maybe Andrew, just the way, like, Tasmania and their success story has paved over a lot of the cracks. And I think the New Zealand absence, they've stepped up in that absence, but you're totally right. Sorry, Adam.
No, I was just going to say, it felt empty watching New Zealand, just because you knew they had their backs up against the wall so much, being no home games whatsoever. It just, yeah, it was hard as a sort of impartial fan that I kind of consider myself to be, to really get into their games and see how well they can do, because you knew it was an impossible task almost.
And they were begging for death. I'll jump through the schedule, but they were begging for death at the end there. They lost to Adelaide by 33. It was not even a game on their schedule. They just wanted it over with. It was sad. Sorry, watching, unfortunately. The other thing I'll say is, the health of Brisbane is an issue. I know they've just put out an announcement about a marquee player signing. I think it's Sobey. I don't think it's Baines. I think that's probably a bit of a stretch for them. I think it's Sobey re-upping. Was he under contract?
Yeah, I think he was due to... I think his contract expired, so that would fit.
Is that a big news release for someone of the calibre of Sobey? Is that warranted?
I think so.
Yeah, I agree.
Think so. For a Brisbane teamer. Oh, you think it's bigger? No, I think this is the same as when Adelaide were like, oh, we've made a major signing, and it was like the Sofa King in Glenelg, whatever it was. I think it's kind of that vibe to it. No, I think it's Sobey. If it's Baines, I'd be pretty surprised. He broke that neck. It's not enough money for him to come back. But I could be wrong. I've heard from some people at Sobey, and I've heard rumors it's Baines. So it could be one of the two. Don't know what to say. But their numbers, like Illawarra, you put it really well, Andrew. They've actually had success, so it's very surprising to see their low numbers. But Brisbane, I was looking at some social media stuff today, and their numbers are just really low. The lack of interest in them is scary, where you're probably going to see Kesselman have to step in and prop them up. I don't see where their future is. And they played, their on-court was bad, their off-court was even worse. That's a real weak link in the chain for me. I don't know if you guys have got any comment.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Brisbane, they need a rebrand or something. I just don't see that brand really working. The only good thing is, at least they've been getting small numbers, at least the stadium still kind of looks full. Illawarra doesn't even look that. You know, it looks pathetic.
Agreed,
so at least the Brisbane stadium, it's a little shed, you know, tin shed, but it seems to look effective. But the whole Brisbane, just the style of that team, the sort of what do they stand for, there's just nothing there. They're just absolutely vanilla ice cream. Like, who cares?
Yeah. And it's no way. With the health, they wouldn't have been pushing for the playoffs. They're not Tasmania. They would have been sixth, seventh, which is where they are. You know, I don't think that team was good on paper. Sorry, Adam.
I was going to say, if the signing or that media press alert is about Sobey, I would be more excited to hear what their import signing is next season if they finally get him a point guard one to run things and then just let Sobey fly in the two spot, scoring guard spot.
Agreed. Yeah, totally. I think we've seen enough now to know that that's a better lineup. The other thing I want to say about this sort of last thing about the season in general, one thing's official. The NBL is just not ever going to be a pub sport. You know how when you walk into a pub on a Friday, Saturday night, it's NRL, it's AFL, they own the space. There's never going to be a section of the pub for basketball. Never going to happen. I've pulled the pin on that ever happening. But actually, I'm, as far as the health of the NBL goes, that's not such a bad thing, because I was reading around today, and this is a poll put out by La Trobe, that between 18 and 24-year-olds are drinking 20% less than the same age group 10 years ago. So people are drinking less, which means they're out of pubs more, which is good. And Andrew, you tweeted about this. Elon Musk has bought Twitter. And I just like the idea that basketball is a bit of a nerdy sport, because it's kind of NBA's played in the morning and it's not a pub sport. You know, what kind of people are attracted to it? So the idea that it's this techie sport, Adam. Yeah.
I'm going to say it's a watch, at least in Perth and WA, it's a watch it from your desk while at work sport and chat about it.
And a hyperlink sport and a techie sport. And I just want to get, actually, Andrew, you're quite techie minded. Like, where do you think, because we've often said this, we loved it when it was on Twitch, when the NBL, I mean, was on Twitch and YouTube. It's gone to ESPN, which is an older style format. I don't know if that's, it's got its benefits. 45 mil over a couple of years is an obvious benefit. But as far as growing it with this, with, you know, men between 18 and 30 are who this sport attracts and who's going to bolster this league, I feel there's a step away there. What do you think, Andrew, as far as techie stuff goes?
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. They've taken the old money that was on offer now, and they've foregone the opportunity of getting new audience, younger audience, and potential future money. So the News Corp deal and the Foxtel and so on, that obviously meant that they had to say goodbye to Twitch. But that Twitch thing, like, that's where esports is happening. That's where all the young gamers are hanging out. If you want to find your next young audience, that's a really good place to be. And they've given that away for the sake of getting the cash now. So it's a loss. And I think will it cause long-term problems? It's too early to tell, right?
I agree.
But I think they need to, if they're not going to have Twitch, they need to really go hardcore on the clips and like the TikToks, letting people cut up, you know, and do the different, have access to the highlights. That's what the NBA did really well. They just went, they said, you put our stuff on YouTube, we won't copyright claim it. Whereas the NFL went the other way and locked down, and it just allowed an audience to thrive. Yeah. And I think the NBL need to let that social media thing have some steam.
Well, here's the thing that I find interesting is because there's a huge division between NBL HQ and the clubs. And I think the stuff that the league does from a social standpoint, out of sight. Guy Neville, Darren Barker, their stuff is really creative, polished, and also their expediency. They get stuff out real fast. Their in-plays are, if you're following along from the game, not watching it, you can get every highlight play through their socials. They're really good. But the clubs, I got to slam a few clubs here for this. And we've talked about this before, Andrew. We're like, every club has at their disposal YouTube and TikTok. They're free forums. They can put up whatever they want. I mean, I don't know what the rights with the broadcast is, but I would have thought they'd have free reign over their footage, or they could film stuff. You know what I mean? And they go take advantage of it.
Yeah, it should be a requirement. It should be a requirement of their license that they have to use this stuff nowadays, you know.
Yeah, and it's just like you use it to just put yourself in the day-to-day swing of good luck, right? And maybe the views are only 500 on a video, but, you know, you've got to put up content, if not every day, you know, 2-3 times a week. But let me get this. Have a guess which team, you'll laugh at it, which team has been the person with the longest absence on YouTube? Have a guess which team it is, and then if you want to, have a guess how long that is. Adam, I'll get you to go first. Which team do you think longest absence? Oh,
man. Longest absence. I'm
like, when was their last video?
I'm leaning towards Brisbane because Illawarra would have had stuff up when LaMelo was there, surely.
Yeah. Banger. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So, and Andrew, any idea which team would be the least uploaded to YouTube and the longest to go?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I would have said Brisbane as well. And as the least uploaded overall, I'm still trending Brisbane.
Okay.
How long ago? Before they were, when they were the Brisbane Bullets of the previous generation, what, 8 years ago?
Listen, to be honest, they're all charting pretty well. Perth just yesterday, Adelaide a day ago, 17 hours. Most of them are within a day or two. New Zealand, 14 days ago. But the worst... It's my team. The Sydney Kings have not uploaded to their YouTube in over 1 year. This whole season, they haven't uploaded.
What was their last video, Joe? What was their last video?
It's a sort of three-way conference call between Kick It, Newley, and I think a media person, and that's from a year ago. And it only specifies a year. It could be a year and a couple of months. So they've gone the whole season without using the YouTube, a free service that anyone can download to and isn't particularly expensive or time-consuming. I think it's contentious.
It's,
a,
It's an interesting one that I had a question for, Joe, and maybe you might have a better side of this, but I know living in Perth and being entrenched in everything that's happening with the Wildcats, they upload every press conference. Like, you can access it. Yeah. It used to just be the audio and audio boom, but, you know, when, like, it, there's got to be like two, maybe three press conferences a week that, you know, you've got full access to. And I would almost be like, it's like live TV now. Like, if it's not up there, like, I'm disappointed. Like, where the hell is this? But I wonder, do other clubs do that? Like, their midweek training presses for the weekly news. Are other clubs holding them? Are they uploading them? Like, what's happening there?
Well, I had, I only scanned over, like, mainly looking at when teams put up to YouTube. I didn't look terribly close at what they put up. But, yeah, most teams seem to put up their press conferences. Their own particular feed of it, which I think is a little bit lazy. You have to take that vision, take that audio and clip it into something with a bit of game footage. And you could do something quite attention grabbing, but they just whack it up there like video file from the NBL. Yep, thanks, upload, title, done. It's something. It's decent content for the absolute diehard fans, but I'm not richly compelled by it. But the other thing I want to talk about is TikTok going the other way. I mean, again, the Sydney Kings fall short. TikTok is the fastest growing. Adam, can I get you to, if you see the mute down the bottom?
Yep.
You're a bit scratchy.
Sorry.
No, all good. There we go. TikTok. I know that TikTok is looking to invest in women's soccer. They're looking to hand over a bit of money there. And the NBL just hasn't taken advantage of TikTok. Perth have. They've got almost 23,000 followers on there, but the rest around about 5 to 10, and Sydney have got under 1,000, which is the lowest. And only 9 videos in their existence. TikTok is something you got to put something up to every day. And it's a great platform for short form videos. So I just don't know what these clubs, and I had to pick on Sydney. I mean, I don't, but I'll pick on them anyway. But you have these free things at your disposal. And, you know, you complain about the NBL not pulling their weight, not helping the clubs. Help yourself, clubs. You've got these amazing platforms that kids putting on makeup gets millions of views, and you're not using them. And if you do use them, you're not using them well. So that, when we talk about the health of NBL 22, that really irks me, working small in the sector and knowing so many guys and girls who could contribute so much to that sphere, totally ignored. Just really, really, this shocked me to see. I thought it was really bad. I don't know.
I don't know how people can see the what the New Zealand Breakers have done with their social media and how much love and engagement they've attracted because of that. Why you would not seek to replicate it? Like, it just seems like a no-brainer. Like, look at what's working, what people are enjoying, and copy it. Like, and okay, you know, Perth is the same. They don't do a lot. They're not as fun as the Breakers. They're a bit more serious, but they're consistent, and they still have a bit of they have some funny stuff occasionally, so they're just constantly putting stuff up, and they cross promote it. They have their sponsorship deals where, you know, the highlights sponsored by so-and-so they monetize everything as well. They're really good at that. It just seems like, again, a missed opportunity from other clubs. Perth, if you want to find money, Perth, find a way to monetize the crap out of everything.
My favorite this season, Andrew, when you talk about that, was just the Bauer and O'Day sponsorship. So the Wildcats have sponsorship from a funeral company, and they use that to do memories of, you know, NBL or their history and throwback video clips. I mean, it's smart. It works well. But, you know, you never would have thought a funeral company would be a sponsor in the NBL.
But this is what I talk about when talking about how this is not a pub sport, and clubs need to realize it, because I see Sydney. I mean, I talk about Sydney a lot. They are my hometown team, so the team I know intimately, or at least the best. And they're always knocking on the door of like radio and SEN and NRL programs. And it's like, guys, you just got to accept it. You're not a pub sport. I know they're probably great to hang around with, but if you're serious about this team and it's not just a retirement hobby, you've got to think smarter, and the people you hire have got to do better. And knowing a lot of people that work in the sector, I could point you in the direction of some guys who are doing amazing work and would, you know, make a presence on these platforms. So yeah, I want to try to get that out of it.
There's still that ego about being seen on the 6 o'clock news, right? Even if you're not really seen, because who watches 6 o'clock news anymore? But
exactly.
For an owner, they're like, yeah, we've made it now. We're on the news, on free-to-air TV. But yeah, good luck with that. Who cares?
It's like It's the only ego trip is like, hey, mum, turn on 6 o'clock. Yeah, I'm there. I'm watching. Yeah, you're watching? Yeah, I'm on TV. No one else is watching it. No one under 65. But, you know, is it an ego boost? Right. Are we serious about these clubs? And that would be my question I've got. Let's jump on. Let's move from that. Wildcats. We have to talk about it. It's the most recent thing. The streak is over, 35 years down. I just got one blanket question. We'll start with you first, Andrew. Does the streak matter?
Does the streak matter? Yes, it matters. It matters. That was a world record. There's no other professional team out there that has a final streak of 35 years. It's ridiculously long. So, yes, it matters. It's something that people identified with, fan base identified with, the club itself, the players, they identified with it. They were really bought into maintaining that streak. Nobody wanted to be have the streak end on their watch. So, yeah, it was super critical. And I think it's you can make the argument that, you know, teams with lesser records have gotten through all that. That doesn't matter. It's like the streak, okay? And the streak is now over. And while you can move on from it and you just stop talking about it and away you go again, and that might be cathartic, yeah, it mattered.
Adam? Oh,
sorry, I'm muting.
All good.
Sorry, Andrew. I don't think it matters anymore because there is no more streak. It's been 0 years since we've been in the playoffs, and Tasmania have a longer streak than we have at the moment. I say we, but it's off, mate. Look, it definitely mattered. You just got to look at Jesse Wagstaff's reaction after the siren. He was dejected. Bryce was dejected. You know, those players with tenure there were all dejected. And it does mean something. You're right. No one wanted it to happen on their watch. Watching from the sidelines, you had Damian Martin calling the doing the sideline broadcast. And then you had Greg Heyer was also there doing the radio broadcast. So, you know, looking at their faces, looking at Jesse's face, like, you know, it meant something to the players to keep that going. But I think in the big scheme of things, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. Like I've tweeted this, that the identity of the Wildcats wasn't the 35-year streak. The identity is winning and success. And as long as they continue winning and continue to be successful, then that mantra and everything will continue on. And I'm all about, you know, what do you do next? How do you respond to this? What's the next move? How are you going to be bigger, better, and deal with this blip on your record? And, you know, what does that mean next season? So I'm excited about it. It would be nice to have continued it. Can't argue that. But I don't, yeah. That's my personal thoughts on it.
It seems like you two echo what Simon Mitchell said in the presser, where he was like, yeah, streak's over. So what? You get to start a new one, like most NBL clubs, you know? I do think it matters. And it matters for two reasons, I think. Three reasons. One is, yeah, it's a stain on the resume for the guys that unfortunately are part of this team. Secondly, it matters because it should be 36. If this team was good enough to make the finals, they should have made it. So that's where it's kind of like, oh, this was not. And then secondly, new ownership group in their first year loses the streak. If they maintain this year and then lost it next year, okay. You know, but to lose first year in and you drop out, it's just a really sour taste to a new start over. And it just indicates to every fan that they did something wrong to the last preceding 35 years. And they have. You know, you can't deny that what they did wasn't successful. There's a whole bunch of excuses for it. Reasons. COVID and so on and so forth. But, yeah, that's what I think.
I think there's a certain weight to it that's been added on by the fact that the last two times Perth have had new coaches come in, so Gleeson and Beveridge, they've won championships in their first season. Now, granted, that was a long time ago now. You know, Perth fans, remember, they've got a loyal fan base. So, you know, just the performance of a new coach coming in has got so much weight and expectation on it. So that in the entire season leading up to that final shot of Bryce's not dropping, the silence and the gasp for air after that miss and the siren went off was deafening.
Yeah, and I think you've got also that new coach coming in who didn't seem to have the same level of respect or appreciation or put the same value on that streak. He seemed like he didn't care or didn't get the psyche. And Perth's unique. Like, Perth is not even the rest of Australia. Perth is different. And you see this in politics. You know, politicians don't get WA. We are different, and we get hammered for that and criticised. But it's part of the psyche of being so far away from everything. You build up your own culture. And that's happened here. And I think you had Scott Morrison come in not understanding that and seeing this as just a successful franchise with money behind it, like the LA Lakers or something of the NBA. You know, it's like, yeah, but no, it's different. And if you didn't pay it enough respect, and then that got people more offside, and that created a whole nother, you know, a whole nother waterfall of issues just coming at it.
You put it best, Andrew, and you've led on to our next topic. I got a question for you both. We'll start with Adam. Is Morrison predominantly to blame for the streak being over, or the lack of success and therefore the streak being over? Two-part question. Will he return? Is he to blame? Will he return? Adam West out.
I don't think he deserves the brunt of the blame. He shares some of it. I think he will return. So there are my two answers up front. I think it's important to remember, and if you go and listen to the Dribble podcast with Craig O'Donoghue, he interviewed Danny Mills today. One thing that was, you know, really brought out was Scott, being the 40th year, Scott Morrison didn't have the opportunity to actually meet any of the previous players, coaches, people involved with the club because of COVID protocols. And I think that and him arriving a day before preseason all played factors into this perceived notion that everyone seems to have the same read on, that he didn't get the culture, didn't have the respect for it, just didn't seem to be visible in any of the interviews. And maybe he's using that as a defense mechanism and not saying that, you know, giving the streak too much weight. But yeah, where am I going with my train of thought here? He shares the blame of it, but I think recruiting and Danny Mills' side has to take a decent portion of that. But again, he coached the team first time around. 16 and whatever record it is, the pieces in place to make the playoffs, like you said earlier, Joe. So
yeah.
Hopefully I'm not fence-sitting too much on that one.
See, I think that's a bit of a Andrew. I think that's a defensive cop out there. If that's the answer he gave, they were sitting in isolation on the other side of the country for months. Like, he could have picked up a phone and called Andrew Vlahov, called Ricky Grace. They would have spoken to him. He could have gotten his head around that. He had plenty of time. So I think that's a bit of a cop out. It's a nice bit of retcon, you know, retrospective. What does retcon stand for? I forget now as I say it.
A reboot of history.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You know, so,
revisionist.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think it's very convenient to say that now. He had time. He could have gotten his head around it. You know, that to me is a cop out. So I guess in answering your question, Joe, he will be around next season because the owner has already said that, irrespective of a review yet to undertake. He's already given the outcome and saying Morrison's going to be back. So that undermines the review. Is he to blame? Yes, he is to blame. In conjunction with Danny Mills. But I think, you know, ultimately in pro sports, like, usually the coach wears it. And I know we always say, oh, if they win, the players get the kudos and the coach gets the blame. Well, yeah, that's how it works. That's pro sports.
Here's what I thought. I mean, all they needed was one win, right? And yes, they lost the Southeast moment in the last game. But they lost two games that were inexcusable. Third game of the year at RAC Arena against Brisbane. They let Patterson go off for 27. Lamar Patterson had a horrible year all year, and they let him go off for 27 and got beat. And then the other one that was real bad was, I want to say, about a couple of weeks ago, where they lost to Adelaide were down by 20 points in the first half at home to Adelaide, who was struggling. That was before they were the streak busters. This was an Adelaide on its ass, and they lost. Inexcusable losses where they didn't play hard, they didn't play well. It was the same combination of players. They had Vic Law for both and they lost. So yeah, I kind of, this whole COVID thing and blah, 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 I was like, they won more games in a hotel room in COVID protocols than they did at home. So something went horribly wrong. And yeah, Morrison was a lot of that.
Yep, go on. Yep.
Just on that, Joe, again, from that Danny Mills interview, and something that I don't think is too well known, they were still in some form of COVID protocols for these last nine games, even though they're in Perth. And they weren't
the state government mandates. They were NBL club mandates, where they were very limited in their movements off the court. So not saying, I'm not making excuses, but you could argue that being stuck at home in Perth, in your house with your family could be worse.
It's worse
than being on the road around basketball and not, you know what I mean? Like, you got little kids and all that sort of stuff. So,
You
know, I don't know the level of what their bubble was like when they were under those restrictions, but maybe that's played a factor into it as well.
Yeah, the other thing that stood out to me over the course of this, particularly the last third of the season, this last home stretch, is the amount of disharmony that you seem to see in the team. So often I would see Vic Law particularly jawing off at Scott Morrison, even Bryce Cotton, disenfranchised. It just seemed like players were arguing and bitching back and forth a lot more than what you would typically see from Wildcats team. It's just a really interesting whether that was, you know, that they were genuinely upset. That's how the culture has become in the team, where you can just go at each other a bit more, whereas perhaps in the past they were a bit more, you know, respectful, and that was kind of driven home by management. I don't know, but it certainly seemed that there was a lot more discontent.
I think it's a reflection of Morrison's personality, good, bad, or otherwise. I kind of like it from an entertainment interest point of view, but then don't like it from a, does it get wins?
Sorry,
Joe, did that come through?
Oh, yeah. No, it did. I just want to say, I thought the same thing. I just want to say quickly, like, there's a rule in teaching. A friend of mine's a teacher. He goes, listen, when you start a new school year, don't smile until Easter. So the first couple of months of the season, months of the teaching season or start of the year, everyone thinks, yeah, that Mr. Such and Such, he's a hard ass, because you can loosen up, but you can't tighten up. And I feel like Morrison came in making jokes and so on and so forth. I loved it from an entertainment standpoint, like you, Adam, loved it. But I was like, what happens when you tighten up? And you just saw, you know, they had a strong start to the season and then a weaker end of the season. So, yep, maybe that's something to do with it. But sorry, Adam, you were saying?
Just going back to the Illawarra game, the second last game of the season.
Yes.
Imports, Antonius Cleveland and Raython Mays were having a field day. Oh, they were loving it. The jawjacking with Morrison every time down the court. Don't know if the TV cameras picked it up, but where I sit, my season tickets are right behind the Wildcats bench. So when play was down one end, or
yeah, I know Cleveland going at it.
They were jawjacking, and like, it was friendly banter, but it's just like, you're just not used to seeing it as a Perth fan, because Gleeson ran such a tight ship. No one stepped out of line. They had their bullshit umbrella that they didn't let anything in. It's just a very different culture, which, again, entertaining to see, but if it doesn't get wins, that's ultimately what dictates ticket sales in Perth, I believe.
Agreed. And listen, I've used this word babysit. Trevor Gleeson babysat this team, gave it emotion, gave it identity. That players didn't have to talk to the refs because he was already talking to the refs. You know, he really, and that's why Blanchfield had a much better year last year than this year. I don't want to talk about Blanchfield quickly. Like, here's the other secret thing about the building the Wildcats roster, and that this is where they're going to have to improve going forward, is in their locals. The best locals on the Wildcats, until Cotton, if he ever becomes a local, are Mitch Norton, pretty good local, and second batch is Blanchfield. So when Norton went down, your best local is Blanchfield. And if you look around the league, you've got Cooks in Sydney and Reith and Illawarra and up at Sobey and Creek, and got all these guys who were, you know, so when you look at the stocks of locals, the Perth are way down, and they lost Martin, they lost Kay, you know, they had this huge local drought. On Blanchfield, his last two games in the must-win games against Illawarra, South East Melbourne, this is combined over two games, 15 points, 5 of 18, 28% from the field, 2 of 10 from 3. And, you know, without Gleeson's flex, simple offense and his energy, the locals kind of struggled without that. What do you call it? I mean, babysitting's a bad word, but without that instruction, that's how I felt. Anyway, what do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, Blanchfield was seem aggressive. And that push shot he's got going on, man, if you just laid the ball up, he'd be in a much better place. But you're right in terms of the Australian contingent. Wildcats have traditionally had at least one boomer level player in their team. You know, you talk about, you mentioned Damian Martin, Nick Kay, you know, Brandt, even, you know, Angus Brandt before that. Yep. A whole bunch of Aussies that have always had that boomer contingent. They don't have that at the moment. So that is your really, really good point in that that's a real weakness. And, yeah, Bryce Cotton's papered over those cracks for a period of time, but perhaps we've seen peak Bryce, you know, now perhaps he's just starting to, you know, reach his, you know, he's maybe on the downward slide just a little bit, and it shows up.
Speaking on peak Bryce, again, this is hot off the press from Danny Mills' interview on that Dribble podcast. He did say that Bryce's third year is a player option, but that they were deep in negotiations and they're both camps are expected to extend it. The NBL allows a maximum of a three-year contract, so there's no such thing as a five-year contract or something like that. So that's something from Danny. And the other one was that he expects that if Travers does get drafted and he's stashed, that he will come back to Perth. I don't know how that works, how he can make that happen without being drafted yet. But
we'll talk about that.
I think that's two things that they're banking on.
Not sure they have a say in that, do they? Is it?
I don't know. I don't think Travers has much. We're going to talk about Travers in a bit. I think NBA draft and Travers, I think it's maybe the last time those couple of words are mentioned together. But I want to say this as well. In answer to that question I posed before, will Morrison return? I think if he's got a say in the matter, I don't think he'd want to. We were talking about this before, Adam, a couple of days ago. He had a culture clash with not only this team and Perth, but the country, the whole sense of humour. Australian sport is no place for irony, wit, sophistication, introspection, sarcasm, humour. It's clicky, it's boring, it's an aggressive landscape. And Morrison, it seemed to me, he just got here and was like, I don't understand these people at all. They don't get my sense of humour. They don't get me, full stop. If he has a chance, if they come to him and say, listen, if you agree to eat the rest of the deal, like you go off and find something else and we just not pay you and we just handshake and it's over, I think he'd say, you know what, if you can find someone else, I don't want to do it. I thought he really, toward the end, hated the job here. Would you agree, Andrew?
He seemed like he hated it. Yeah, he was really, really, had really negative attitude towards it. Yeah, you talked about having to wear a bloody red polo shirt at every occasion and every little thing I criticised. I felt like he was criticising. It seemed like this is a man who's just at his wit's end and he's probably going home and then going home and probably copping it from his wife.
Oh, what do you think, Adam?
I think it's summed up because if you looked at his media appearances over the course of the season, did he have fun? Was he enjoying himself? Okay, cracked a few jokes here and there, but it didn't. People didn't pick up on it or just it wasn't received well. So, yeah, did he have fun? Doesn't look like it, but, again, you don't see everything. I get his frustration at the I always got to wear red thing and, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but the Wildcats are so big on their
stuffy.
On their mantras and their, you know, and it's all across the walls. And, you know, if you go into the office, you can see it. It's you know, like as someone coming in and experiencing this and learning it, I can see how it's put it down to the job interview. You do your job interview and you think this place is going to be a nice place to work. But it's until you get there and get your feet on the floor and you experience the culture, do you really get an idea for what you're in for? You either buy in or you don't like it at all. I'll just finish by saying I'm happy to see what he can do next season. I'm all about what you can learn, what he's going to learn and how he's going to improve. And then I'll make my harsher judgment.
Andrew, just before you jump in, I want to say this quickly. You're right, Adam. I want to either back him in and go for another year, or if you're going to bring in someone, make sure it's someone who's established in the league, you know, someone who's got some runs on the board. And we always say these names, Beveridge and so forth. But, you know, the other guys, even some assistants who've been around, like someone who's got feet on the ground, knows what they're coming into. And that's where I just make this point quickly before I go to you, Andrew. Danny Mills made a miscalculation in bringing in a guy who'd never seen the league, and with COVID and getting him in and all that sort of stuff late, it was a mistake in judgment. They needed a safe bet to preserve the streak. As much as it doesn't mean much, it means something to preserve that and winning team and holy shit, new management. We've got to put a run on the board at the very least. They took a bit of a risk, which I like. It didn't pan out, and, you know, you wear it on your face. Andrew, you were going to say something.
I was just going to ask Adam, is he suggesting that there's too much cult in the culture of the team? Has it become a bit, like, cultish in the way that you must wear the red and sing the mantras and do all those things.
I it wouldn't surprise me if that's how someone may feel, or that might be their take on it, because it is very like the culture. Like, you hear it when players come over to Perth, it's usually in a positive light, but they always talk about the culture and how it's so different here to compared to wherever it was. It is different. They've got the resources, they've got the structure, they've got the processes. It's a professionally run club, so everything works, but it works in its own weird red Willy Wonka sort of way. And that's just Perth, and that's probably why some people just don't get it.
You know, fair enough. All right, let's jump off the Wildcats, unless either of you have got anything pressing to say. We've given a lot there. Let's move on. I want to quickly say, did anyone watch the Melbourne Jack Jumpers game? Are we under any illusions that this was a tank, a rest game, a game to screw over the Wildcats? I think it totally was. I think they had Vickerman ran some...
Don't call it a game, Joe. Don't call it a game. It doesn't deserve that term.
It was I mean, there was a lineup of like Triplett, Prewster, Hickey, Peatling, and an old mop. I don't know who was on the court. It was an absolute joke. Vickerman, how they kept a straight face, him and Golding in the presser, I'll never know. They wanted to see the Wildcats go down, not because they're a better matchup, the Jack Jumpers, not because they wanted the Jack Jumpers, just because they didn't want Perth. They, for a spiritual reason, a personal reason. What do you think, Adam?
I don't think they threw the game. I think they just they earned the right to play that game however they liked. And if that was resting people and working on things and giving other people minutes, then so be it. One thing I'll probably say is that just looking at the chatter from the Red Army in quotation marks after that loss, I don't think anyone blames Melbourne for doing what they did. I think that's gone fairly quiet. I think if you had a Perth team firing on all cylinders and, with a legit shot at challenging for that championship, you'd hear a lot more outcry from what the lineup and the way Melbourne played. But personally, I think Melbourne was like, I didn't expect much from them, and they did what I think any team in their position would be in full right to do. I just wonder if it's going to come and bite them on the butt when Tasmania go to play them on Thursday.
The other thing as well is, I think it would have been made worse if the Wildcat game, if they'd lost to South East Melbourne and then Melbourne United had played their game and totally laid down, then that would have been blood in the streets. They were so good. Andrew, so did you want to say something?
I can't wait to see Nelly smile. It's going to be sensational. He's had all his dental work done. Once he knocks down that first triple and he gives us the big Cheshire grin, man, just check it out.
Do you reckon you'll have a new mouth guard? Or will it be the gold-plated mouth?
If he has any sense of humor, he'll rock something out.
What's funny is I lost all respect and credibility for someone with NBL credentials on Twitter when I asked, was this a tank job? And he's like, no, I don't think it was. I was like, nah, come on. Just behave. Let's jump on. New Zealand beat for death. We've done that. Travis, let's go there. Declared for the NBA draft. Travis, what year did he have? Is he going to get drafted? Let's start with Andrew Kane.
If he gets drafted, there are a lot of players in the NBL that should have a reason to be very upset, because he's not better than many other players in this league. So if he is, it's just the old, what is it, Hubie Brown, the tremendous upside potential? That's the only thing that he's got going for him. He can't shoot. He's fairly soft. I don't see it at all. His defense is okay. So I don't see how he's ticking those 3-and-D boxes. I just don't get it. He's okay bringing the ball up, but I don't ever feel like he's the handle is totally safe. So, yeah, it's just potential. So I think he's got zero chance of being drafted.
Adam, what's up?
I think he will withdraw his entry whenever that time limit is. I think the way the announcement came kind of shook me. It was like they just got eliminated from the playoffs, and then his agent's gone and announced, or whoever's gone and announced, that he's declaring for the draft. So I think that was a pre-committed thing that, okay, at season's end, I'm going to nominate for the draft. But that's all fine and well. It goes in. But I definitely think he's going to withdraw and then go in the following year. That's just my hunch on it. Yeah,
Does he have that ability, though? I thought he was at the wrong age group. And I'm looking at Jackson McDonald in the comments, if maybe he's got insight there. But what's his age at where he can do that? I thought this is kind of his last roll of the dice.
I'm not sure about that. Sorry, maybe I'm
me neither.
Wrong then.
But if Huck Porty's taken his name out, Huck Porty's 77th on the 100. So that's just out of the number. So he's going, nah, not going to do it. Come back and try again. And Travis is nowhere near it. Anyway, sorry, Adam.
No. But my thing for Travis is just the aggression, attitude, charisma side of things. You can't be this timid little shell in the NBA world, I think. His talent and natural ability will get him so far. But, yeah, you need to show some pizzazz out there to you know, get a few likes on TikTok and Instagram and really put yourself out there.
You're up against guys who are coming out of the hood and of, like, the NBA is their one chance of escaping being murdered on a street corner. Like, I'm sorry, you've grown up in Rockingham. Okay, that's fairly rough, but you got to bring more aggression.
The mullet's not enough.
I'll say this. Atir Majuk got drafted some 10, 12 years ago. Remember him? Atir Majuk was the former Wildcat. Here's what I'd be saying. Listen, he's got to get over there and get in front of as many scouts as he can. He is relatively athletic, not super athletic, but if he can pop athletically and then maybe just hit a whole bunch of threes, catch fire, maybe it's a late second round pick. That's if he goes, like, yes, yeah, that, and he might take it. But here's one I think was probably Morrison's biggest failing all year. Despite the streak and the losses and the presses that weren't particularly pleasant, this was his biggest failure is Travis. Travis was on an uphill trajectory. He looked great under Gleason. Body, he was athletic, couldn't shoot the three, but you thought, oh, if he can just put up good three-point numbers, yeah, he's got the body to be a 3-and-D in the NBA off the bench. And this year, he just plummeted. And look at this, no further than the big swing skill was three-point shooting. No improvement, in fact, regression. NBL 21, he was about just under 30%, 29.4%. This season, 25. So down 5%. Not a huge amount, but, you know, had more to say in this team, had more to do, and the percentages went down. So it was a bad look. And he didn't look comfortable. He had a little bit of ability to kind of make decisions, but when the ball was in his hands in the absence of Norton, the ball, he wasn't very dynamic with the ball. So I think he's really going to struggle. But obviously, yeah, we always wish him luck here, but good luck to him.
For a number of interviews over the course of the season, the players talking about the amount of individual work that Morrison would do with the players and sort of help them develop and teach them about the NBA, but also work on their skills, get their reps up, and that he was really development focused. That's coming from player interviews that I've had.
Andrew, you're dropping in and out.
It's like you got your head in a pillowcase. But point taken. Really? Whatever you said, it was brilliant.
It was brilliant. Damn it.
Well, now you're coming through great.
I was saying that Morrison, in interviews with players, suggested that Morrison spent a lot of time on skill development and individuals, and yet we never saw the evidence of that on court. So I can't reconcile the two.
Fair enough. I will say this, going back to the Wildcats quickly, the commentators were wetting themselves with joy at the streak being over. They couldn't even contain, I think they were more enjoying the theatre and the entertainment of it, but gee, there was a part of them that was like, this is not our favourite team in Schadenfreude. You know, you could taste it in the telecast. I don't know if you guys saw that. That's all we've got on Travis. Let's talk about the MVP and any awards. I think mainly MVP. Adams is the front runner. I kind of don't see it. He's missed a lot of games. He's missed a quarter of the season, 7 games. I just think it's too many. We'll go with Adam Westerhout. What do you think? Is he a lock MVP or someone else?
I don't think he should be a lock. Plain and simple, you look at the numbers, look at the games played, Cotton should get it.
Agreed.
Adams has been amazing. He's been entertaining. He's what you want in an MVP candidate caliber player. But I think when it comes down to the voting group, they'll look at games played. They'll look at points scored. Cotton's a scoring champion again. And while scoring's not everything, it is a lot. And that's, you know, a lot of things that people look to. So it's hard. I don't think Adams is a lot for it, despite the narrative that's sort of been pushed the last couple of months, or last month at least. But I still think it's Cotton's. I think Cotton will get this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I'd be customer vote for Cotton, but only just. I mean, he just didn't have that great a year. But at first, we were talking about, this is now branching into this conversation. Andrew, we'll get you to go first.
Cotton. You were like, have we seen the best of Bryce Cotton? It's past him. I don't think that. I think he played a good year. I just thought he was under so much pressure. The percentages were always going to drop. But what do you think? Is he the MVP? And have we seen his best, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it was a down year for Cotton. And I really liked Adams. I thought he was really fun to watch. I think if it was me casting the vote, I'd still give it Cotton, though. He still was a better overall player that was defended like no other player in this league is defended, and he has to fight through that and still control that Wildcats team. So I still think he's the MVP. I don't think he'll win it because I think the narrative is all about Sydney. It's all about how amazing the new hotness is. Bryce Cotton's had a down year, as we've been talking about. I think Adams will win it, and I think Cotton should win it.
Any other contenders? I mean, the three they've got are Adams, Cotton, and JLA. The guy who I think is unlucky not to make that shortlist is Xavier Cooks. I just thought when he got into a rhythm, I know they lost with him at the start of the year, but once they all kind of clicked into that team, man, he's their second-best player, maybe better than Martin, maybe just. I think he's had a huge year. He's a real stud.
Is there some rule about not having two nominees from the same team?
Yeah, I don't know. But JLA had a pretty good year. I mean, JLA had the front of the year and Cooks kind of had the back end of the year. But he would have led the league in double-doubles, Cook. Cooks, I haven't checked this out, but I think he might. But he's a bit unlucky not to kind of make that finals list. Adam Westhout.
For me, JLA is, like, numbers aside and production aside, he is up in that conversation of most valuable players because there's no other player like him skill-wise, athletic-wise. So if you're building a team, if you're signing your first player, he's definitely up there as someone you'd take just because he's a matchup nightmare. That's my argument for JLA. I think he's well-deserved to be in that category. I just think Adams and Cotton probably front runners.
We've got someone, Michael, who I don't recognize. We're going to invite him in to have a chat. I don't know, Michael. Michael, you're coming in. No, Michael's dropped off. Oh, that's embarrassing. Too bad. Michael, if you're still keen to jump in and have a chat, do let us know. What did I want to say? I think Adams is going to win it, but I'd probably cast my vote for Cotton. But I certainly wouldn't begrudge Adams winning it. He's had a really good year. And even if JLA won it, I really think that people would have to cast their mind back. Oh, here comes Michael. Michael, what did you want to say, my friend? Not a lot. No problem. JLA. So anyway, I've been distracted there, but we'll jump on. I think we're really moving on to the semifinals now. Let's have a look here. We've got fun matchups.
Sort of the wrong way around. I would have rather some of these be the... You get what?
Andrew, things are messing up. You're the techie guy as well, which is mostly good. But let's do this. Let's talk about Melbourne, Tasmania first. I just want to say quickly, Tasmania amazingly own the season series 2-1. You can kind of take out one of those wins. One was the laydown. I'll give my impression first. I don't think this is a contest. I think Melbourne win this series in a sweep 2-0. I just think JLA, who I kind of just rubbish in the MVP debate, but JLA, Huck Porty are just going to dominate the smaller jack jumpers. I remember JLA in particular just making catches and just like holding it like Goliath, like a bully over the head of these guys and dunking it. I don't see how it works. Illy and Dellavedova on Adams and Majette. It's too good a defensive matchup in Melbourne United's favour. I hope I'm wrong. Tasmania are very charming. They're a Cinderella team, but fairy tales are for bedtime stories, not for sports. I think Melbourne 2-0. Let's go, Adam Westhout.
I'm on the Tassie bandwagon. I'm here for the Cinderella story. I think they might, if they can get a punch in, if they can steal game one. I'm all about this is the ultimate underdog story. I think going back to the last game I saw them in Perth, they are relentless. They're like bloody ants, and when they're crawling over you, and they will do their damnedest to try and steal that game in Melbourne, and I'm here to see it. And I'm going to back them. I think they're on a roller coaster right now, and their best shot is this game one to try and steal that win. But I still think Melbourne will win the series.
Do you think they'll? So you think Melbourne 2-1?
Melbourne 2-1, yes.
Andrew Kenyon.
Yes.
we were just saying Melbourne and Tasmania. Who you got and how many and why?
I think Melbourne will take this, and I think they'll probably sweep it. I just think they've got too much inside. It'll be the JLA and Huck 40 will just feast. I don't think there's any stopping them. So I think playoff intensity Melbourne United will get the Jack Jumpers, but it will be fun.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that worked it all. Sorry, I forgot to hit unmute. Yeah, that's perfect. So we're all agreed Melbourne are going to win it. Adam Westerhout thinks that Tasmania might take a game. I think it's actually going to be a bit destructive. I think Melbourne are going to get the whistle. They're going to set the defense. Yeah, Tasmania are a Melbourne / Perth kind of clone. You know, they're an imitator. They're an imitation of the imitators. So I'm not high on them terribly. They've had a great run, but it's over. Let's move on. Illawarra Sydney. Season record is in favor of the Hawks, 3-1, which I was actually really surprised to see that, even though most of the games were kind of late in the year when Sydney had pieced it together and had Adams. I hope I'm reading that right. Let's go with Adam Andrew Kenyon first. Who takes the series, how long, and why?
This is a fun one, and this would be worthy of a grand final series. Brutal. It's really tough to tip. I'm gonna go with the Gong in three. I just think Gorge will work his magic. I hope you guys are coming through. I hope this signal's getting through.
It is.
Gorge will work. I think Cleveland will be up and about. I think they're just going to be so fired up. And the Sydney Kings might just get a little bit nervous. A lot of pressure has been put on this team. There's a lot of expectations. And they might start to feel the choke.
Adam. Jumping on the back of that, Andrew, I agree with you. I'm with the Gong on this one. I think Illawarra is going to get it, and that's because the crumble has already started to begin. What's the third import's name again? It escapes me.
Ian Clark.
Ian Clark. When he's footstepped on that out of bounds play on that three ball to win the game. I think that was the start of the crumble, the start of that little bit of pressure that always seems to get Sydney. They've got the talent to definitely do it. But my whole thought during this epic run of theirs is just that when push comes to shove, when the pressure comes and the glitz of that 13-game win streak dissolves and the pressure's on to win, do they have the intestinal fortitude to get over that hump and deliver? And I think Gorge's experience may trump Chase Buford's.
You guys have mirrored my thoughts exactly. To me, this boils down to a matchup thing. And the matchups are clearly in favor of Sydney, though. Cleveland, Rathenmayes, Reith, and Harvey against Adams, Martin, Cooks, and Clark. I'll ask you, who do you like better in that matchup? Cleveland, Rathenmayes, Reith, Harvey. Adams, Martin, Cooks, Clark. Adams is so good. Martin's real good and Cooks is real good. Ian Clark's kind of a swing player for them. I feel he's a bit iffy, but so is Antonius Cleveland. And he takes some shots that are just ridiculous. I cannot look past the Sydney matchups. They're better. Adam, what do you think?
Sydney matches are better. I think Ian Clark's the X factor because coming in late in the season, I think he's got another gear to go through, which we probably haven't seen fully yet. Would we say Illawarra's defense is better? Do we know what their defense is ranked compared to Sydney? Do they have the tools?
I don't have that on hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Just going by Gorge's teams and history and defense, like Illawarra's got the size and length to be a problem. So I'll give them that.
Yeah, true. And we've all said it, but yeah, the spanner in the works for me because I'm tipping Sydney. I think they'll win it 2-1. Real, this is going to be a great series. 2-1, all games will be tight, but I don't like my pick. And the reason why I don't like it is I think the Sydney Kings need to jump out to big leads in first half because once they go into halftime, Brian Gorgon is going to make R.C. Buford's son look silly. I don't think the Sydney Kings will win a single second half in this series. So if they come out real punchy, Sydney fired up, get up 10-15 and sort of hold it to an 8-point lead to halftime, then they're a chance, but I think they're going to get outfoxed in seconds. But I just don't think it's enough. I just can't look past, like, Reith is not quite the player I like defensively on Martin or Cooks. Sam Froling, to me, is not on that level either. I think Cooks is playing at a level where he just goes and gets four offensive rebounds for
6 or 8 points that are just devastating, and they matter big time. And it's just, yeah, that's what I'm going with. Andrew, what do you think?
The series could come down to who performs better out of Jessup and Clark. So you've got the ex-NBA guy versus the up-and-coming NBA guy, both three-point shooters. Which of those ones steps up? And I'm going to go with Jessup, and I'm going to go with the Hawks, but I'm quite ready to be totally wrong on it.
We all agree this is a much closer series than Melbourne Taz, right?
That is. I like that train of thought, Andrew, and I love Jessup as a player and a shooter, but something about Clark, I'm wary about him. I just think he's going to explode and give us something we haven't seen yet. And then
in a good way or bad way?
In a good way.
But you're still picking Illawarra, though.
Yeah. I think the guy you're understating.
I'm so sorry, guys. I think the guy you're understating is Jerome Martin. I just don't know who's going to match up on him. I think he's too big for Reith. I think he's too big for Sam. Too big for Sam Proling, and too kind of just a better player than Reith. I think he's going to be real trouble, and Cooks as well. I can't look past Harry. Those two.
He's been waiting all season for this.
You said Harry Froley. I knew you were going to say something.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Good.
I think we're going to move on from there. I think that's all we've really got. You guys got any other questions or comments? Go for it. Fire away.
I had a couple of questions I wanted to shoot off to you guys as soon as I got this opportunity. I actually made some notes on my phone. This one for both of you, but we'll go to Andrew first, right? With Elon Musk potentially buying out Twitter, if Elon could purchase any NBL club, which club do you think it should be and why?
We could have the Elon ending.
Elon
wants to, he likes to pump and dump. So he wants to pump up the value of a stock and then flog it off again. So let's see what's low at the moment that he could talk up and then get out of real quick. Let's say he'd probably take Brizzy.
I'm going to jump in. It's Adelaide. Isn't he from Adelaide? He's from South Australia, right?
Is he? I did not know that.
No, he just built a battery. He just helped try and build that battery in.
Oh, the battery farm.
In South. Oh, yeah. Another one of his harebrained schemes where he goes on Twitter and says he will do something, and sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. He promised the World Bank like $6 billion and never paid up. So you can't trust the guy.
No, he's South African. Sorry. That's way off.
Second question, Joe.
Yep.
What did you guys think of hashtag next level this season? I really liked the hashtag last season of See Incredible. I thought it was natural. It wasn't trying too hard. Hit the mark. It was easy to use in conversation. What about next level? I've never said it in a lift like Deli has.
It. The thing that bugged me there was like, oh, no, he's the worst guy for it too. No, NBL's next level. But the levels were wrong. It was like they're on the ground, and he said it was level 2. I forget the ad. It totally slipped through my consciousness. No, it was bad. And as a result, the commentators never went to it. See Incredible got a workout from not just Homicide, but others. So, no, it was a flop. Also, I didn't really get it. Like, next level or what? Whereas See Incredible I think it totally rolled off the tongue. And I think next level was okay, but because See Incredible was so much better, it kind of got eclipsed. Andrew.
It was pretty ordinary. Next level just sounds a bit cheesy. I didn't love it. I never used it in a tweet. So, back to the drawing board with that one.
Any suggestions for NBL 23? Or is that for another podcast?
I think you have to. No, that's a good question. I don't have anything off the top of my head, but I think you definitely got to go with something that's more like we've come out of COVID and we're going into something new, and it's more like welcome back, a get involved type thing, more of a walk the consumer pathway type thing, other than just something that's a little bit like next level was too ephemeral. Like, well, what does it mean? Like the players are going next level, the league's going next level. You need something that's more like welcome back, like COVID's gone. You stadium's involved. What do you think, Andrew? Say that again, Andrew.
Hashtag muffles.
I didn't get that.
Man, that is a good one. I'm going to try it again.
Try again. There you go.
23 and D.
Oh, that's not bad. Okay. That's not bad.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, not bad at all.
All right. And my last question, Joe and Andrew, is which team would be the best for the league moving forward to win the championship this season?
Andrew, you go first.
I think the best win would be Sydney. They always talk about how for the league to be successful, it needs to be Sydney. So this will either prove them right or prove that to be a total furphy, which I believe it is. The only downside with that is we'll never hear the end of Paul Smith if that's to occur. And the less I hear of that guy, the better. So I don't really want Sydney to win. But I do think for the league, it would probably be their most preferred outcome.
I think it's Tasmania. And I totally agree with you on that, Andrew. And I think you're really, that's a keen point. But I think Tasmania, because to me, this league has been too long. It's been Perth, Melbourne, Sydney. It's just been the three big cities for a long while now. Who was the last small market to make it to the finals? I guess it was Cairns or something. The idea that a small team from Tasmania can make it says a lot. It also says like what you can get out of well-spent money for a small team. And it just sheds all those excuses that the clubs have had for a long time that, oh, we can't do this, and Perth this, and Melbourne that. Well, you know, if Tasmania do this and then take it to the next level, hashtag next level, then, you know, you got a real case for it. So that's what I'd say. Just quickly on the Paul Smith thing. That, what do we all think of that, where he took a swipe at the Red Army? We could see it coming, but, you know, what did you think, Adam?
He's just not very good at it. I get the merit. I'm all for him talking smack, but he's just not very good at it. Like, he just misses the mark. Like, it's very boomerish. Like, it's just like he's there. He's so close, but not. That's my take on it.
Andrew, what do you think? It's very hey at Saturday level like punchlines. What do you think, Andrew?
I just think it's sad that a person that has so much is still so wound up and, you know, petty about these things that it really don't matter in the big course of things. Like, just get over it, mate. Go back and count your money and be satisfied with that, the lovely house I'm sure you have. You know, just get over it.
I'd say this. I'd say, listen, put out the tweet, but at the same time, look in your back of house, look who your media and comms people are and say, hey, how about we upload something to fucking YouTube and TikTok for the first time this season? How about that? It's free. You don't have to spend a dime. Anyway, lads, I think that's about it. Unless, Andrew, you got anything to leave this on? Or?
I just want to say apologies for the quality of my signal strength.
It happens.
I am working remotely, obviously, so not ideal. Especially when, obviously, my best line of the night is you get what you get and you don't get upset, didn't get through. So there we go.
What was that in relation to?
I can't remember now.
That was a great line even at the end with no context. Good stuff. Adam, last word.
I just want to say thank you to the fan man in the stand and Joe. I can't remember what your
slogan is. He's a sports media minnow.
Me neither.
I suppose.
There we go.
But I really love what you guys do with this podcast. It's very entertaining. And it's nice to have a fan perspective. And thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Let's look at the listeners. Dylan, do you want to come in and have a chat while we've got you here? I'm gonna invite to speak. And Jackson as well. Let's bring everyone in. If you want to speak, speak now, forever hold your peace. Dylan's in. Mr. Shadowstalker.
Hello, am I on?
Jackson, how you doing? You got one comment or question? Fire away.
Right. Do you think ownership, like Hutchison, and all, like there was this quote that came out this week, and Hutchison said, "We are the most, I think it was most active ownership this club has ever enjoyed," and that came out in the West Australian.
Most hands-on.
Most hands-on, thank you. Like, do you think that's a fair statement by him?
Hands-on, and then things quickly sift through those the hands that are buttered and mess it up, if you're talking about John Brown and likewise. Maybe they were. I don't think so. I mean, Gleeson was pretty hands-on. You could see him on the sidelines. So, no, I think that's a bit of a cover-up. I will say this. I just don't think they had as much at their disposal at Bendat. Bendat was in his late 90s. He didn't care about spending extra money here and obviously had the connections to make things work off court. as far as getting players cars or getting players this or that or home life. You know, he had all that covered. So this is not a direct answer to your question, Jackson, but I just feel like they maybe had to run around a bit more to just make up for that ease at which Bendat could get things done. What do you think, Andrew?
I just saw that as a classic, like I was talking earlier, a classic Melburnian coming in and saying, look, we're doing it better than anybody's ever done it before, with no understanding of what's come before them, truly. Like, I'm sorry, you had Bendat was hands-on to an extent. Like, he hands-on in terms of he gave people the money and let them go for it. Before that, you're telling me that Andrew Vlahov wasn't hands-on? Like, he saved that club from doom and was doing everything from sweeping
Vlahov was on the court. Vlahov was on the court, putting buckets in. You can't get more hands-on.
Sorry,
than
that's just a that's the sort of statement that will piss people off who follow the Wildcats for a long period of time.
Agreed. Agreed. I'm looking at Mr. Shadowstalker. Dylan, you got anything for us?
Yeah, I do. Hey, guys. Hope you're all going well.
Yeah, going well. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. Hope everyone joins the Discord at NBL Pocket Podcast as well, too. Little shout out to that group over there.
Now that. What do you got? What's up?
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching. Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, what would be the top coach that you would like to see in next season for the worst performing team in the league?
Andrew Canyon.
Yeah, let's see. I would like to see John Riley. And send him to one of the Queensland teams. I don't care which one, but he's got a connection to Queensland. But the Brisbane would be the most ideal. He played for them. I think he's a good coach. Of an opportunity. I don't want to throw James Duncan under a bus, but he didn't set the world on fire. So let's get John Riley up in Queensland and see what he can do.
Adam?
Bevo in Brisbane, just because it's got a nice ring to it. But I think Bevo can do a good job with a young team. I don't know if Brisbane's a young team, but, you know, if they were restarting, I think that's a good spot for Bevo.
I don't know. Like, I actually don't mind CJ Bruton. He was a coach of a lower team. Amazingly, I don't mind Shamir. You know, I think these years have just been a mess. Like, how do you grade these years for New Zealand? You know, so I would like to see him go around again. So I'm just trying to think what that bottom team is. Adam Ford in Cairns, I thought they did all right. When Machado was healthy, they looked better. They weren't an easy beat. But, yeah, I think, Adam, I'm going to go with that. I just feel like Rob Beveridge should have a job in the league. He's not doing anything terribly pressing that's high paid that would keep him out of it. I'd just like to see him with a small market team again. I mean, I just can't look over the fact that the last time he coached was that dreadful Illawarra team that had Cedric Jackson, a faded, broken Cedric Jackson as an import. Jordair Jett, nice little player, but not Cotton, not Vic Law, not Jarrell Martin, you know, Jordair Jett. And they got 12 wins out of that team, I think it was, or 13, I can't recall, one of the two. Right on the sort of sixth, seventh, could have gone, you know, that guy can, something is right. I just want to see a team go, yeah, we're going to back in crazy personalities. But I think, you know, Scott Roth is the type of guy who could go to any club and flip, you know, turn around a bad culture in a day. It seems that way. He's got it made. So not a great answer to that question. It's the best I got. All right, lads. Well, I think we'll end it there. But Dylan, Jackson, Daniel, thanks for coming in earlier. And Michael, who's from Poland. We had a Polish listener. There you go. So appreciate that, everyone coming on. Andrew, always a pleasure. Adam, appreciate it. Jackson, Dylan, see you next time, guys.